Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk Chicago's 12th podcast. What a milestone it is. My name's John Zagluel, owner and operator of Sports Talk Chicago. Today on the podcast, we will have a very special guest, and before I introduce him, we're going to have a few quick announcements. Follow Sports Talk Chicago on Twitter, at ShyTalkSports. Follow me on Google+, Instagram, and LinkedIn, at John Zagluel. Also, if you like what we're doing here, make sure to comment on the podcast and or send me an email, info@sportstalkchicago.com. So let's talk about our special guest here on the show today. He's a 13-time Emmy Award winner. He's broadcasted for over four decades. He used to be a reporter on Chicago Bears Weekly, the official TV show of the Chicago Bears, and he also worked on the network level for the Today Show on NBC. Currently, he is a career services specialist at Northwestern University in Evanston. Please welcome Robert Hillman to the show. All right, folks, here with me again, Robert Hillman. Robert, how are you doing here today, and thank you for being on the show. All right, and we all know Robert, again, he used to be a Chicago Bears Weekly co-host and reporter, so let's talk about the Bears, Robert, first of all. Now, their season this year has not been the best, right? I mean, the Bears have lost five games that could have went either way. They could be leading their own division right now. So what do you think about their overall performance this year as a whole?
Well, I think you're underestimating them if you say they're not a good team or they've been very disappointing. Yeah, the record's disappointing, but I was going to point out just exactly what you pointed out, John, and that is the fact that if you look at the five games they lost that they easily could have won, they're leading their division or at best tied for their division. And, you know, it's a shame they couldn't do it. I mean, to mention the games that you just mentioned, the Lions 37-34, that was a giveaway. Then they lose to the Vikings 23-20, a game that I happen to be at, agonizing in the stands as the game was played. Remember the Broncos 17-15 loss. Then they come back and upset the Packers, and everyone thinks, wow, playoffs, you know, we beat the Packers, we're on the mend, we're turning the season around, and what happens? The guy that you least expect would blow games for you, blew games. Robbie Gould blew a game against San Francisco, then blew the game against Washington, and they're out of it. And frankly speaking, John, you know, what was very disappointing to me was not their season to that point, because they did give effort. They do have talent on this team. They just found ways to lose games instead of win games, and young teams are going to do that. But what I saw Sunday, and I don't know if you saw the same thing I did, I saw no effort on Sunday. I saw no effort against the Vikings. It's as if these guys had given up and figured there's no shot at the playoffs, so we'll just quit. And the bottom line is, they should have been playing for an 8-8 season. You know, players make mistakes that way, John, down the stretch. And what they do is they kind of give up. But, you know, those last two or three games where you're really out of it, and in the Bears' case, the last two games, coaches want to see who puts forth the effort. Jobs are at stake next year. If a coach sees that you want to put forth effort because you're out of the playoffs, that's trouble. So, yeah, they could have been a different result for the Bears this year. That's why, when people are very hard on them, well, they're 5-9, it could have easily been 10-4.
And yes, thank you, Robert. I totally agree with you on that. I mean, I'm an avid Bears watcher. I watch the games every week, and especially how you mentioned last week where there seemed to be no effort. Some were saying that this was the game where they finally just got blown out, and for no reason whatsoever. There was just no effort put forth, and we could all notice that. I mean, the kick return and the onside kick, some bright spots, but then right away they're giving away the ball on three and out downs. I mean, the entire game. So really, great point right there.
Yeah, well, defensively, they had no heart, they had no spirit. I mean, receivers were getting behind defenders. But I have to tell you something. You know, when Cutler gets sacked five times, that offensive line either doesn't care or needs to be revamped. And I think it's a little bit of both. It definitely needs a revamping on the offensive line. They got to protect Cutler more. I mean, it seems like every time this guy tries to throw a football, he's under pressure. And what happens when Cutler's under pressure? Jay wants to make things happen. He throws passes where bad decisions are involved. He throws it into traffic. I mean, there's just no excuse for what happened when he throws a screen pass that's picked. I mean, he could have handed the ball to the guy, you know, on the Vikings, and he runs in it for a touchdown. You know, it was one of the worst passes I've ever seen him throw. But he's a better quarterback this year because his interception rate is down, so I suppose that's good news.
Exactly. You know, I was just about to ask you that, and I was going to say, despite the underachieving season, Jay Cutler is actually having a career year, with career highs in passer rating, interception percentage, and yards gained per pass. So do you think there's a reasonable explanation for why Cutler is surpassing the team's struggles and succeeding on his own terms?
Well, I think the reason for that is I think John Fox worked with him. And I think he said, look, Jay, you know, we got to cut down on the interceptions. And he found a way to do it. He may not be dropping back as much. He may not be throwing as many reckless passes, as many long passes. Now, you throw the screens, the flares, passes out in the flat, crosses over the middle. You know, that's going to cut down on your interception rate. And I think, you know, John Fox said we can't have it, and he worked with him, and I think it's paid off to a large degree. The thing that I don't like about Jay Cutler is, and you know, I hate to say it, John, but there's a certain amount of arrogance about the guy.
I agree.
And I saw him sitting on the bench, you know, and the quarterback, you know, they take film. I guess you know this. They take film from up above, and then they bring the film down to the sideline so the quarterback can look at it.
Right.
You know, after his series. He sits there like, yeah, okay, I get it, yeah, right, okay. And I just see that arrogance. I don't see that fire in him. I really don't. And I think he could use a little bit more of that. But that being said, I think Fox had worked with him. I think the quarterback coach worked with him. And I think he's cut down. He's become a better quarterback, mainly because he hasn't thrown the picks.
Exactly. I totally agree. And again, you are right, though, about the arrogance. I agree with that. I mean, when you think about it, Cutler, and in order to be an NFL quarterback, you really have to have an open mind. You have to harness on your mistakes. You have to make sure you correct them when you go back out there. And with Cutler, it seems like, oh, okay, I made a mistake. I'm just going to go back out there. But you got to learn from what you're doing, or else you're not going to be a better quarterback in the future. So I agree with that.
I think, John, you know, take a look at Cam Newton. Can you tell me any other player in the National Football League that's having more fun than he is this year?
No, I cannot.
If you can, tell me.
There's nobody I can really think of. And exactly, I mean, he had a good rookie year, and the past 3 years, he's seen his touchdowns go down and his interceptions go up. Then all of a sudden this year, he's bustling into the MVP conversation right away.
Well, I MVP for sure, but the Panthers are an enigma to me. You know, they have a great defense, although they let the Giants back in the game on Sunday pretty much. But I just can't figure that Carolina's a 13-0 team. As a matter of fact, I picked New England to stay undefeated ahead of Carolina. I thought Green Bay would stay undefeated ahead of Carolina. And Carolina's still the only unbeaten team in football. So go figure that out. But my point in bringing Cam Newton up, John, was this. You not only have to go out and execute and have that attitude, you have to have fun. Jay Cutler doesn't look like he is having any fun at all, ever. And it's sad. I mean, it really is sad.
Exactly.
And it's sad that people are paying, you know, the kind of money they paid to see 9 losses. But again, if you put things in perspective, Google blew 2 games for them. And if they just had more experience and found a way to win the other 3 games that they lost, I mean, they've lost collectively 5 games by a total of 17 points. The 5 games we're talking about. The
right.
First 3 games, let's face it, you know, against Green Bay, Arizona, Seattle, blowouts, you know, I mean, you know, and then last week, every
exactly.
other game they were in.
Exactly. You're perfectly right. And I did want to mention, after that devastating loss against San Francisco, some, and I've heard this on the radios throughout the week, suspect the Bears of tanking in order to receive a better draft pick in next year's draft. Now, although tanking is highly illegal, do you believe they are at least engaging in some form of it?
Nope. Absolutely, positively not. There's too much at stake to tank a game. Absolutely too much at stake. The only way I can see a team maybe tanking a game is if going into the last week, a win by a team or a loss by another team or vice versa can mean the first pick in the first round. I can see that. With 3 games left in the season, absolutely no way. And the Bears have no way of getting, you know, a significantly better draft pick to tank games at this point. It's not like they're going to get the first pick in the draft.
Right.
I mean, that's going to go to, another team.
Yeah, like Tennessee.
I know, and I think it's highly unethical, and I think the players are under such scrutiny about that very thing that they wouldn't dare do it. Now, you know, I suggest that since the last two games don't mean much, John, what I would do if I were John Fox is I would play Cutler, for example, for a half. I'd play my people for a half. And then take a look at some of the other players so that you can evaluate after the season who you want to keep, who you don't want to keep, who has promise, who doesn't promise, who does not have promise for next season. And I would certainly do that. You know, they're going to have a tough game in Tampa this Sunday. I mean, Lovie Smith wants to, you know, beat his old team. I got to tell you, half the stadium might be filled for the last game against Detroit. Cold January day, you know, the game means nothing. But anyway, I would play my regulars, not risk any of my regulars getting injured for no reason, but play them for a half, as the NFL expects. And then evaluate for next season. Take a look at some of your other players. There have been some really good players on this team this year. Really good.
Exactly, and that was actually going right into my next question. Another storyline for the team has to be the rookie production. I mean, Jeremy Langford stepping up, Adrian Amos, Jonathan Anderson, Eddie Goldman, all on defense. They've all exceeded expectations and have kept the Bears in games. Now, my question is, has it been coaching, a will to succeed, or maybe a combination of both with regards to the rookies showing promise throughout this year? Because, I mean, they've really exceeded expectations. And, I mean, I was out there at training camp, and, I mean, these guys were nobodies. Nobody even knew them. Nobody was paying attention to them. And they just blew up automatically throughout these first weeks of the year and now heading into the last couple of games.
Yeah, no, and I fully agree with you. You know, every team has injuries, and players have to step up. You mentioned Jeremy Langford. I'm really very impressed with this kid. I really am. Matt Forte goes down. He's your stud. He's your player, you know, he's your franchise player, quote unquote, so to speak. And Jeremy Langford comes in and shows that he can not only run as well as Forte, but he can catch passes out of the backfield. He can go a little bit deep. I mean, every team has injuries. Now, you know, Alshon Jeff, another case in point, he was injured. People came in and stepped up, Bellamy, Royal. And don't forget, Kevin White, their first-round pick, was injured all year. He didn't play a down.
Exactly.
And so they had to pick up the slack for him. But, yeah, I agree with you. I'm really impressed with the way some of the rookies have stepped up. And that's my point. The point is these kids are good. They put forth effort for every game but the last game, and they're showing that their inexperience may have lost them some games in the end in the fourth quarter where they didn't finish games, but they're going to have a year under their belt next year, and you're going to have all your studs back, and I think it may be a different story next year. If they were blown out of every game, I'd say, you know what, this is terrible, but they weren't. You and I discussed at least twice during this thing they could have 10 wins. Very easily. So next year may be a different story when these kids have experience under their belts. But a lot of players have stepped up with the absence of Forte, the absence of Jeffrey, and done a great job. I agree with that. And it's just last game they didn't put forth any effort.
All right. And also, I did want to mention ESPN's first mock draft came out for next year. And the Bears are said to take cornerback Vernon Hargreaves from the University of Florida with the 10th overall pick. Now, saying that, what do you think are the most vital needs for this Bears squad heading into 2016 for next year?
I'm going to give you my philosophy on the draft, John, okay? And the Bears can use, look, running back, they're pretty well set. Quarterback, they're not going to get rid of Cutler, but they do need to have some quarterback because I don't know how much longer Cutler is going to go. I don't know how much longer he wants to play. He's a very brittle guy. They probably could use another quarterback, certainly offensive lineman, and they could use help at every position on defense. That doesn't mean they're bad. It means they can use help on every position on defense. So here's my theory on the draft. The first three rounds of the draft, you draft need. You go for need. First round especially, you go for need. And if that's the quarterback, because they really have no backups. I mean, if Cutler goes down, who do they have? Sales? Who do they have? So they do need a quarterback. So I would think that. But the second round, you draft need. Third round, you draft need. Then in the fourth round, where the pickings get slimmer, you take the best available athlete. third round, first three rounds you draft need.
Yeah, great philosophy.
I think the Bears do need a quarterback, and so, you know, if they get who they really want to get in the mock draft, and those mock drafts generally don't go the way they're planned, quarterback would be fine. They need some offensive linemen, like I said. Definitely need offensive linemen. They're loaded at wide receiver. I think they're loaded at wide receiver. Tight end is good. You know what, this guy, Zach Miller.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he come on this year? I mean, who even knew about this guy?
You know, Zach Miller, a great thing about him, too, is, you know, he's been on the roster for the past 2 years. Last year, he was hurt much of the year, almost all the year.
This
year, he was the main backup for Martellus. Martellus goes down, and I mean, what a game. You know, I watched him. That was like the first time I've ever seen him play in an NFL game, that week where he had the two touchdown catches. And right away, I was hooked on him, and he's been doing a great job ever since. I mean, you think about it, now it's going to make it easier for the Bears to cut Martellus, save some money, and keep Zach Miller as the starter.
Yeah, they can, and they do need some help still at tight end. So I'm saying every team needs help, but the key is with injuries this year, every team has injuries, but every team overcomes, and good teams overcome injuries. That's all I can tell you about that. But I think next year the Bears will be okay. The problem is that the Bears are in a division with a guy named Aaron Rodgers. You start in a hole before you even begin the season. I mean, because that guy is flat out terrific. I mean, even on a bad day, he looks great. Now the Vikings, their second year coach has done a terrific job with the Vikings, so the Vikings are going to be a factor again next year. The Lions, who knows with them? The Lions are, always bringing up the rear. But don't forget, their division, the NFC North, is very difficult with Minnesota and, of course, Green Bay. So as good as the Bears may be next year, they have to be even better than what they think they should be if they're going to win their division. That's going to be tough.
Exactly. That makes a ton of sense, too. And back on your point as well, when we're just talking about the Bears next year, I mean, a lot of guys up for free agency, too. I know Alshon Jeffery's actually going to become a free agent. Matt Forte, another guy, going to be out there. So it'll be interesting to see, too, how they attack it. Maybe put a franchise tag on one of them or both of them, or give them a bigger contract. I mean, I don't know what they would do either, especially with the emergence of Langford and Kevin White coming back next year. I mean, something to think about for sure.
Well, I think, if you mentioned to me, Jeffrey and Forte, I would stand to lose Forte more than Jeffrey. I think Langford can fill in, and even if they did lose Jeffrey, you have some other receivers that came up, Bellamy, Royal, and then you got Kevin White next year, and I think, they're okay, but, you've got to find ways to keep these people. You have to find ways. That's why, I really admire the Cubs. I mean, as good as they were this past year, they still went out, spent money, $120 million, I believe, for Jason Hayward. And if you look at their pitching staff, and you look at Rizzo, Bryant, and Russell in the infield there, if they're not favorites to get to the World Series, I didn't say win it, I said get to the World Series, I didn't know what other team would be, because they're loaded, but the commitment was there. The commitment was there from Theo Epstein to make this team a winner, and in a very short amount of time, I think he's done a great job. The Bears have to do the same thing. I mean, it cost a fortune to go to those games. I know. I've been with a friend. I see his tickets. If I told you what he pays for these things, you wouldn't believe it. Then you got to pay for parking and concessions and seat licenses and putting on a wait list to get season tickets. It's insane. They have lottery after lottery after lottery. So they're making money. If you go to a Bears game, everything is sponsored. Bears coming out of the tunnel is sponsored by advertisements, neon lights all around, advertisements on the scoreboard. You got to take some of that money. Ryan Pace has to take some of that money and invest in a team and do whatever it takes to keep his studs. And that would be Forte and that would be Jeffrey, who are arguably two of the studs on the Bears.
Exactly. You're exactly right. I agree with that totally. And then finally, my last question to you, and I know this season hasn't been the best, but what is a prominent memory in your eyes for the 2015 Chicago Bears? What is one, aspect that sort of sums up this season?
Well, it would have to be any of the last second losses. I think the thing that stands out most in my mind, and you know, they played some good games, but I think what really stands out most in my mind, because it did perhaps cost the Bears a playoff shot, or at least being in the hunt at this point, was Robbie Gould failing twice, where he hits every single field goal, failing in two games that cost the Bears two games. That would be, you know, a really, I think one of the big memories that I will take away is beating the Packers in Green Bay, because that's when I thought the season was turned around. That was a hell of a game to win, 17-13 up in Green Bay. That game would stand out in my mind. It's unfortunate that most of the games that stand out in my mind were losing causes, but the losses that stand out were the two that Gould blew. You know, you look at the first three games, you know, Arizona with them, that there was nothing magical or memorable about that one, and Green Bay won opening day, and then they go to Seattle and get shut out. But then they start that streak of wins, you know, where they beat Kansas City and they beat Oakland, and those stand out, but not again, not as much as Gould, netting up two games for them. I just couldn't believe it.
I agree totally. I mean, Robbie Gould, one of the most reliable kickers in the game, has one of the best all-time percentages as far as kicking. And another thing, too, is that those two field goals weren't that far away. I mean, those were inside 40 yards. So, I agree. It's all the more shocking to think that Robbie Gould will miss field goals inside the 40, or inside 40 yards, rather. I mean,
it was shocking to Robbie, too. So shocking that if you remember in the San Francisco game, I think he pulled two left. In the Washington game, I think to compensate for that, he didn't want to hook left. He was under pressure. You know, the confidence factor starts coming in, even with a guy of Gould's stature. So now he doesn't want to miss left, so what does he do? He misses wide right.
Exactly. That makes perfect sense.
Go figure. And nobody felt worse than Gould. And I could see, you know, it's tough enough if he missed one during the course of a game. It's the third quarter. It's the second quarter of the game. There's plenty of time to go. But these were game in the balance kicks that he blew. When was the last time that happened?
Hard for me to remember, if ever. Probably never happened.
Really? Crazy, so, but, you know, he's still very good, and I'm sure he'll be back next year.
All right. Thank you so much, Robert Hillman, folks, on Sports Talk Chicago's podcast. Robert, really appreciate your time and your great feedback here, and keep in mind, you're always welcome any other time. Great analysis for the Chicago Bears. Thank you so much.
Yeah, just give me a call anytime. Happy to do it, John. Happy holidays to you and everybody listening.
All right. Thank you so much, Robert.
Okay, take care, buddy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And again, folks, if you didn't know, that was Robert Hillman, who used to be the co-host and a reporter on Chicago Bears Weekly, so certainly knows his stuff. Again, thank you to Robert for that segment on the Bears. Well, folks, we spent so much time on the Bears, nearly 23 minutes. I'm going to make sure to get in some segments about the other teams and finish up with our closing remarks, but again, keep in mind they're going to be a little shorter because our podcasts usually run about 30 minutes. So let's next get to the Chicago Cubs, and I want to talk about their free agent signings, especially Jason Hayward, John Lackey, Ben Zobrist. I don't know if you guys saw, I posted an article on the website about the three transactions, and I tell you, what a job by Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer, and company getting all those three guys. I mean, you think about it, Lackey is now going to start to round out that rotation. First of all, you got Arrieta, Lester, then you throw Lackey into the mix, and then Hamill and Hendricks. That is a pretty darn good rotation. And MLB.com recently rated the Cubs as the number one rotation in baseball. They have the highest WAR amongst the five pitchers, wins above replacement. So something shocking to think about that you know, a simple transaction like getting a John Lackey-type player for 2 years, I mean, that really bolsters the Cubs' rotation, and a lot of people undermine the deal. But, I mean, you really got to look at it in detail. I mean, last year, Lackey had a career year. That was his first year ever. He posted an ERA under 3. He led the team, or at least helped lead the team, to 100 wins. The team won the division, and he did okay in the playoffs. But the point is, John Lackey is a proven winner. He's already won a World Series with the Red Sox in 2013. Again, without Theo Epstein. But again, Lackey is a proven winner. He's a veteran. He's a proven guy. And again, very excited for him to be on the team. Let's turn to Ben Zobrist now. That was kind of shocking to me. I heard the Cubs were in the running for it, but I didn't really believe it, considering that Starlin Castro put up a great second half last year and rounded out his average to a clean 265. But nevertheless, the Cubs traded Castro to the Yankees, and talk about a team who is in dire need of a second baseman, so they get what they want. Cubs get Adam Warren back, and we'll talk about him later. Could be a number five starter, or could be a long man in the bullpen. But again, Ben Zobrist, funny that the Cubs offered him a four-year deal, and he's already 35 years old. So, kind of risky there, but you know what? I think what the Cubs saw is consistency. I mean, Zobrist has been hitting consistently above 260 since 2007. The guy's hitting 15 to 20 homers a year. He's getting 50 to 75 RBIs. I mean, he is a very good offensive second baseman. And especially in these times in MLB where, I mean, you think about it, there are only two or three really good offensive second baseman and shortstops, rather. And to think that the Cubs now have one of them is very good to think about. And again, Zobrist and Madden, big ties from beforehand all the way back in Tampa Bay. They both went to the World Series together in 2008, and Zobrist recently won it with the Royals here in 2015. So another proven winner coming to the Chicago Cubs. I mean, you see a pattern here. Then, obviously, we got to talk about the big signing, Jason Hayward. 8 years, $184 million. I mean, the Cubs just really cashed in. I mean, last year, they win the John Lester sweepstakes. This year, they come on back, and you know what? They signed Jason Hayward to a big deal, and he deserves it. Last year, career high in batting average, .293. I mean, he had a lot of RBIs. He had career high in stolen bases as well. And also did a great job in the outfield. I mean, defensive war, he was in the top five, as well as assists by a right fielder. And although he will be playing center this year, I mean, it will be a bit of a transition for him. But I don't expect it to be horrible, and I really expect Hayward to not only, I mean, stay as productive as he was in the outfield, but as well, put up some good numbers, especially in Wrigley Field, where those walls, especially to right field, Hayward being a left-handed hitter, I mean, he could hit a few more balls out of here. I wouldn't be surprised if he could put up a 20 home run season as well. So another clutch hitter on the Cubs. I hate to sum up the transactions, folks, but I did want to mention that on our next podcast, Len Casper, Cubs play-by-play announcer, will be with us, and then we could talk more in detail about those transactions and any other Cubs news you want. And that reminds me, if you guys have any questions that you want to be asked by me to Len Casper or any one of our special guests, make sure to comment or email me again, info@sportstalkchicago.com. Turning gears here to the White Sox, who've also made a couple of moves of their own. First of all, getting Brett Laurie to play second base. And Laurie, another guy who hasn't lived up to his hype, but hasn't been a horrible player either. I mean, Laurie's a guy where you could count on him to hit 260, hit 15 home runs, drive in some runs. And the one thing that I really like about Laurie is, I mean, he has heart. He's out there, he's playing 150, 160 games every year. He doesn't like taking days off. And more importantly, I mean, he used to be on the Blue Jays, he used to be on the A's. I mean, he helps teams win. He's a guy where you know when you have him on your team, this guy's a winner, this guy's going to put it all out on the field. And he did last year, too. Again, hit 260, hit 12 home runs. So, I mean, Brett Laurie, especially playing second base, moving Carlos Sanchez out, who had just an atrocious offensive season for the White Sox, I mean, that gives the Sox a little more stability and balance in their lineup as far as average. Then we move on too to Todd Frazier. That was a huge development and trade for the White Sox. They get rid of, or they acquire Frazier. In turn, they have to get rid of Trace Thompson. But in the eyes of many White Sox fans, I believe that Trace Thompson was not the future. And I know he started out hot, now don't get me wrong, but by the end of the year, he was hitting around .280. He really tailed off. And considering that the Sox got a proven all-star, the 2015 Home Run Derby winner, for someone like Trace Thompson, I mean, that's a steal, and everybody should be applauding that move. Now, I know Frazier did dip in the second half, but, I mean, season totals, 36 home runs, a .255 average. You can live with that in the AL, especially the 36 home runs. And considering that beforehand we had Mike Olt and a number of different guys platooning over at third base, another more stability to that position for sure with the Todd Frazier transaction. So now the White Sox, they aren't looking that bad. Now, although they do have a platoon there at the catching position, everything else looks pretty solid. Their only problem now is going to be starting pitching. Behind Chris Sale and Jose Quintana, they're going to have to find a way to eat up some innings. Hopefully, Carlos Rodon could have another big year, give them a number three. But the 4 and 5 spots are going to be iffy, especially with John Danks, as we all know, a very inconsistent pitcher who has his days and then who doesn't have his days. And again, the Sox lost Jeff Samardzija to free agency, so it'll be interesting to see how the White Sox play that off. And again, folks, remember, I will be having a White Sox guest soon, especially, so make sure to, again, comment any questions you want me to ask him. Moving on to the Chicago Bulls. And the one thing that strikes me about the Bulls that's kind of crazy is the fact that Jimmy Butler calling out coach Fred Hoiberg, and I know everybody is probably criticizing Butler about actually calling out his coach. I know it's disrespectful. It's not a good thing. But in my opinion, it needed to happen, and I'm happy finally or somebody did this, because ever since the Bulls got Fred Hoiberg, they have really lost their identity. The big bad Bulls have turned into the baby Bulls once again, and I'm sick of watching them on TV. When you see them on TV, the Bulls, they have no identity anymore. They have no, they don't strike fear in their opponents anymore, let's put it that way. I mean, the team is more about statistics and more about analysis than just working hard, getting those buckets. I mean, with Tom Thibodeau, now I know he outworked his players, but he got what he got out of his players is the point. I mean, he stretched players to new potentials that we never saw before. Joakim Noah, perfect example. I mean, as a rookie and in his first couple of years in the league, bounced around, didn't get a lot of minutes. Tom Thibodeau comes in, all of a sudden this guy's getting double-doubles, even a couple of triple-doubles last year, and averaging that on a game-by-game basis. Derrick Rose, when he was healthy, he was awesome under Tom Thibodeau's system. And last year, credits to Tom Thibodeau for getting Jimmy Butler into the status of a superstar. And now this year, Fred Hoiberg is more of a passive coach in my mind. I mean, I see him as the type of guy where, sure, his team will score 90, but he doesn't really care, and he's not really worried about it. Fred Hoiberg should be worried about a couple of things. First of all, his job. Because if the Bulls don't even make the playoffs, and I recently read an article, first of all, that said that the Bulls' playoff odds are decreasing, which I've never heard that in my life before, that the Bulls will not be making the playoffs. So think about that for a minute. And then we talk about how Fred Hoiberg, too, I mean, this guy, this is his first year in the NBA. This isn't college basketball. You are facing the pros, Fred. You've got to really focus on getting the job done on the court. I mean, come on now. This is insane, the fact that the Bulls aren't even putting up a lot of points like they were last year. And then on top of it, their defense is atrocious. So the Bulls have a lot to work on, in my opinion. And again, Fred Hoiberg, too, I mean, this is a guy who really has to worry about his job and has to start working his players a little more. I mean, you never hear people ask for more work, but in Jimmy Butler's case, he wants his team to work hard. He wants to eventually get to that championship status. And right now, the Bulls are looking like the days under Vinny Del Negro, where they finished 41-41, 40-42. They capture that 8 seed, and they get bounced. Do you like the pun there? They get bounced out of the first round of the playoffs. So Fred Hoiberg better start watching out, because I'm a Bulls fan, and I hope he hears this when I say it. You guys are in trouble. Moving on now, finally, to the Chicago Blackhawks. And you know what? The Blackhawks, too, they've done well, and they always do well. But I think this year, they aren't doing as well as they would have liked. I mean, I think as a defending champion, they should really be roundhousing these teams. And sure, they're winning games. Sure, they're over 500 by, I believe, 8 games. But they aren't as dominant, too, as last year. They kind of lost their identity and their swagger this year. So, obviously, the loss of Brandon Saad is looking bad for the Hawks, really, because they've lost a key player on that team. But I will say this, as far as bright spots goes, Patrick Kane, I want to just give him a tons of kudos for handling the investigation, or the false, I should say, investigation now about his rape, and or about the rape case, and now look at him. It seems like it's not even phasing him. This guy just had a 25-game point streak, two away from the NHL record, already broke the Hawks franchise record. And now, I mean, it seems like nothing's stopping him anymore. He's doing such a great job. He leads the NHL in points by double digits after that entire investigation that seemingly lasted the whole summer. So, really, kudos to him and kudos to the team as well for not letting that investigation get in the way of their performance. And again, I know the Hawks don't have the same identity, don't have that same integrity as they did last year. But I will say this. The team is still looking good. They're still obviously a playoff contender. And as we know about the Hawks, once they make the playoffs, and just in general, everybody's record goes back to 0-0. The Hawks have a legitimate chance this year of taking home the Stanley Cup for the fourth time now in 7 years if they could do it. And as long as they keep playing their game, listening to Coach Q, and just finishing over 500, again, at this point, I'm not worried about their seeding. I'm just worried about them making it in, getting maybe a 1-5 seed, and from there, I'm not worried about the Hawks. They should succeed, especially in the playoffs. So again, folks, sorry about the shortened segments for every team, but we did talk a lot of Bears with Robert Hillman, former reporter and host of Chicago Bears Weekly on TV. Again, I appreciate him coming out. And now we're going to move on to my final closing segments, starting with the odd sports story of the day. And this story here is via the Huffington Post, and it's called Teen Accidentally Runs a Marathon. How crazy is that? So, here's the caption here. A Philadelphia teenager's family said he accidentally ran all 26.2 miles of the Philadelphia Marathon because he missed a turn on his half-marathon course. So, he runs on his cross-country high school team. He set out Sunday to run the 13.1 half marathon. They were waiting for him to finish on the finish line. He didn't show up. And then he took a wrong turn, kept running an entire marathon, actually finished with a time of a little bit over 5 hours. So how crazy is that? This guy, just trying to run a half marathon, takes one wrong turn, runs out another whole half marathon, basically running a whole marathon. So again, pretty odd coming there out of Philadelphia. So next here is our famed punchline of the day segment. So another sports joke it is here, folks. So the joke here is regarding the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball team. So why don't the Pittsburgh Pirates have a website? And the answer is, they can't string three W's together. Oh, I tell you, I mean, those were the ways of the Pirates way back when, but actually the past couple of years here, they've been doing quite a good job. But again, for the joke's sake, that was pretty good. And finally here, we have our famed Announcer's Call of the Day segment. Everybody is talking about this segment and how they love it so much. So we're going to get a nice clip for you guys to listen to here by a famed announcer. Now this play just occurred recently, and it's called the Miracle in Motown, a Hail Mary play that worked out for the Packers against the Lions on Thursday Night Football. Jim Nance, Phil Sims, let's take a listen.
Touchdown. The son of a former NFL football player who was involved in the fan play, one of the all-time game enders in football history, the Stanford Cal game of years ago, 1982. Now the son comes up with the play of his own. Well,
and again, what a game that was. I watched it myself, and again, I was very mad that the Packers got that second chance, but in that moment, any football fan has to bask in that glory. I mean, think about it. A Hail Mary, nearly 60 yards, ended up getting completed for the game. I mean, just something to think about. Unbelievable. So that'll be it, folks, for Sports Talk Chicago's 12th podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, especially with our accomplished special guest, Robert Hillman, on the show. Again, Robert, thank you so much if you're listening. Again, folks, make sure to subscribe to the website, sportstalkchicago.com. Make sure to hit me up and follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Google+, and LinkedIn. I really appreciate it all, and thank you, folks. We'll make sure to see you soon. And remember, next podcast, another big special guest. I wonder who it'll be. Thank you so much for listening, and happy holidays from all of us here at Sports Talk Chicago.